Welcome to the Optimal Body Podcast. I'm Doc Jen.
And I'm Dr. Dom, and we are doctors of physical therapy, bringing you the body tips and physical therapy pearls of wisdom to help you begin to understand your body, relieve your pains and restrictions, and answer your questions.
Along with expert guests, our goal of the Optimal Body Podcast is really to help you discover what optimal means within your own body. Let's dive in.
Woo! A lot of the big holidays are over. We're stepping into the new year pretty soon, and we have an amazing deal for you, as if you're not already bombarded enough on Cyber Monday.
We're getting in the Cyber Monday spirit.
I know, but this one is really, really exciting. It's literally our lowest deal of the year and something we're probably never going to offer again moving forward, because Gen Health is going to continue to move forward. So for this week only, we're doing it for a full week, so yeah, you have the opportunity to get in. This is your time. This is your chance. We are doing 119. That is the lowest for a full year of a membership ever. And the great thing about getting locked in at this membership price is that it keeps you locked in at this membership price.
Any future year, you will be at the $119 price point. And this gets you 11 specific plans that have either two or three phases each. We will eventually have three phases for all of them.
Yep. And more.
And more beyond that. And so that's technically 33 full different plans that are tailor-made by none other than your Doc Jen Fit over here to help you through certain pain points in your body. There's also full body plans, plans for your core, full body mobility. There's anything that you could wish for. All within that, you could literally go through all of these over the course of the year, and by the time you're done with them, start them back over, and it's just going to help get your body in such an amazing place. It's your one-stop shop for your pain and movement restrictions.
Literally, and I walk you through a day-to-day basis, so you don't have to think anymore. You just get to show up, and especially when we're talking about more of those like shoulder pain, low back pain, knee pain type plans, it's not going to take very much of your time at all. 10 to 15 minutes is what I'm asking of you. And if you go into more of the full body plans, that's where you're going to get a little bit more of the strength workouts. But hey, say you're going through a low back plan, you can also use our explore section to search a strength workout and add that in if you're feeling good within your body, or you have the time and capacity to add something in. You can always use our explore section to search different videos and add more into your life. So we really make this so easy. We're going to continue to add more to it and just make this exactly what you need for your body to feel so great.
So to get in now, make sure you head down to the link down in the show notes. It's just jen.health/free trial. The discount will automatically be applied. So you can just type that into your browser, jen.health/free trial, log in, get your deal, and get moving today.
So we're diving in today for a pearl on calf strains. Mm-hmm. And we did a previous episode on Achilles tendon rupture.
Yeah,
tendonitis. I think we talked about tendonitis and tendon rupture in that one. So this is going to be more specific to strain of the calf and the different muscles of the calf, which a lot of people don't even know. There's a couple big players that are separate muscles that make up the bulk of our calf.
Exactly. And we actually recently this year had a friend who had a significant strain in his calf. And the process that you worked with him a lot through some of that injury phase.
Yes, Oscar. And it's not funny, but his mechanism of injury is exactly what we're going to be talking about in how he did it. And calf strains and Achilles ruptures, I kind of like to refer to them as the has-beens injury, because a lot of people who used to be, major athletes or in sports, or especially in sprint sports like basketball, baseball, anything that you are doing a lot of fast starting and stopping, explosive movements, your body and your mind still remembers how you used to do it.
Yes.
How it used to have been for the has-beens. And then when you're into your, later 20s or 30s, and you go back out for a game of pickup basketball after not having played for 4 or 5 years, that's when it might happen, because, again, your brain, your body is used to what it, used to be able to do and remembers that. And so you try to do that, and the calves don't have that ability in them anymore. They don't have that strength. They don't have that ability to handle that tensile force or that rapid change in direction.
Exactly. And our calf especially is just, it's really vulnerable to injury because it crosses technically three joints. So we talk about our knee, so right all the way up to our gastroc, it's crossing over into our knee, and then crossing down into our ankle. And then we have the subtalar joint in the front where our lower leg and our ankle kind of connect to. So we have all of these different places where the foot moves in a different way, the knee moves in a different way, and it puts a different strain or tension on our calf muscle.
Yeah. And again, just talking about the calf in general, like the major muscles that we're going to be talking about are the gastrocnemius and the soleus. Mm-hmm. You know, there's another one in there called the plantaris, which is just this tiny little muscle that really, when it comes down to it, doesn't do a lot because it's not going to...
That alone isn't doing a lot.
That alone isn't going to change what your gastroc or your soleus are doing. But the gastrocnemius is the muscle on the outside of the calf. It's the one that when you squeeze your calf, you're directly touching. That actually comes all the way up and attaches above the knee on both sides. And we have a medial and lateral head, or a head on the inside and the outside. So that's where it kind of splits off at the top and attaches. And that goes all the way and attaches into the Achilles tendon down by the ankle. Then also you have the soleus muscle, mm-hmm. which does not cross the knee. That actually mm-hmm. attaches into our tibia and our fibula just in the lower leg, and then attaches into that same common Achilles tendon that the gastrocnemius attaches into.
Right. And so when we're talking specifically about a gastrocnemius strain, usually it's happening to that medial head, so the inside of the head, because it has a little bit more muscle activity there. So that's where it's going to be most common, probably like a 2-to-1 ratio. But it's when we have these kinds of injuries, because it crosses the knee, typically when the leg is extended all the way, and then we get a fast, like ballistic change between ankle dorsiflexion, so toes towards you, and then plantar flexion, toes away from you. So think of like pushing off, right? And so if we push off with an extended knee in a really rapid pattern that your body can't tolerate that amount of load that quickly, that's where we typically start to see that strain happen.
Yeah. And with the knee straight, that's where, like Jen was saying, we're going to see it more in the gastrocnemius, mm-hmm. because when the knee's straight, the gastroc is going to be a little more lengthened. And then we're going to have this, what's called passive insufficiency, where mm-hmm. when we're stretched out, like when your arm is way stretched out, you're a little bit weaker. Same with all muscles when it's lengthened out and we have that quick change in direction. Also, just to mention this whole quick change in direction, we actually have fibers within our tendons that sense mm-hmm. how fast our muscle changes length. And there, it's actually a protective mechanism to prevent us from straining or tearing a muscle, which sometimes actually results in us straining or tearing it anyway, when we stretch at a rate that our body isn't used to, or those little muscle spindles that are in our tendons isn't used to, then that muscle wants to contract. Mm-hmm. And that's where that contract will maybe perpetuate straining some of the fibers itself.
Yeah, exactly. And we might get this feeling of like being struck in the back of the leg, or you might even hear like an audible snap or pop that comes with it. And then a lot of people kind of report like this dual type of pain that kind of like lingers.
Yeah, just like it's all aching. You might get some bruising. Again, mm-hmm. that's going to depend on the stage or how severe that strain is, which we're going to talk about the different strains. And then the other one is going to be the gastrocnemius, or the soleus, sorry, the muscle that's a little bit deeper that lies right underneath that gastroc. And that is going to be more in bent knee positions, or mm-hmm. that tends to be more of a fatigue injury where you're doing a lot of running. You might be playing soccer, playing a sport that you're just constantly in a lot of dorsiflexion. So the foot towards the shin. And again, if you're doing a lot of stopping, cutting, your foot's going to constantly be pressed into that dorsiflexion and then changing direction with the knee bent. So we'll have more fatigue in that muscle. And then that's when that'll happen to us, because that muscle just doesn't have the capacity, especially when fatigued. And the symptoms with that, it's going to feel like a deeper ache. Like mm-hmm. you'll just say like, oh, it just feels like it's deep in my leg. Same kind of dull, achy sensation.
Yeah. And then, you know, just to tap on that plantar strain that we can see, typically we don't see it alone. It's usually patterned with the traumatic knee injury. So say you had like an ACL rupture, MCL rupture, well then maybe your plantaris muscle that's kind of high in that knee. So it's like high calf knee area. That's why it's really associated with more of like that traumatic knee injury.
Yeah. And so who's at risk? Like, when do we see these a lot more often? The gastric strain, like we were mentioning, you're going to see it when you're doing a lot of sprint type movements, when you have high ballistic activity, if you're doing a lot of plyometrics, if you're doing, you know, you might see this in some sort of CrossFit activities where you're doing a lot of jumping. Same with any sport or activity where you're running and cutting
suddenly
a lot.
Running, accelerating, or decelerating quickly.
Yeah, quick accelerations and decelerations, where the soleus injury you might see more in a longer duration, you know, activity where you could see more fatigue, where you don't have as much acceleration, deceleration. So you could even see this more often in running than you would see like a gastrocnemius strain.
And it's really just because of the type of muscle fibers that they are a lot of the times as well, right? Where a gastroc is more dense with our fast twitch muscle fibers. So that's why, you know, that change in direction, that high intensity, where our soleus really is more dense with like those slow twitch muscle fibers. So that's why that steady state really kind of affects it.
Yeah. And really overall, you see this more so that like the highest density of population that get these injuries are men in their mid to late 20s, like I said, has-beens, so probably played a sport in high school and college, and then they're getting out trying to relive the glory days, and look at that, you strain your calf. But yeah, in activities that you're doing a lot more acceleration, deceleration, you see a significant amount more in men, especially in athletic or active male populations versus a female population.
Yeah, and you might be at a little bit more risk if you do have, you know, hypermobility that runs generally within your body. Well, with hypermobility, we get a lot of stretch, right? So with a lot of stretch comes the need to have that load capacity associated with it. So if we don't have the appropriate resistance training to go along with that hypermobility, we could be at risk, you know. Genetics, can that play a role? Yes. I mean, there are some genes, right, that we recover better than others. So we just have to be more mindful of, like, if you know you get sore a lot, if you need to, you feel like you need a foam roll, well, you just need to take care of your body a little bit better. So, you know, these higher risk factors, we all could be at risk for it. And we're going to talk about what you can do and really how you can prevent it later as well. But also we have to pay attention to our fatigue as we're getting into activity. Are we super fatigued as we're going through something? And our failure to lengthen a muscle, you know, that is a risk factor as well, which is our general mobility.
Yeah. And that's where we'll talk about like the type of footwear that you might have on. If you always have a heel lift and then you suddenly try to go out and do something barefoot, you're going to be putting a lot more strain on that calf because you don't have that lift anymore. You're going to need to use your ankle more. So for reasons like going back to Oscar, our friend who strained his calf, he was just getting back into fighting. He was taking Muay Thai classes and doing a lot of kicks, and you're barefoot, so you're not wearing any sort of footwear. He does have some barefoot shoes, so hopefully he's wearing them wearing them now. But he just said he was throwing kicks like in succession, so one after the other. And he threw a kick and went and stepped back right to throw another kick. And that's exactly what we're talking about, where you see that quick dorsiflexion back into plantar flexion to push off and kick the bag. And that's where he probably went over his tolerance for, you know, what his calf could handle. And he said I don't know if he said he heard or felt something like a pop.
Yeah, he definitely did.
And just immediately couldn't put any pressure into his foot because his calf was resisting any sort of dorsiflexion after that.
Yeah, so we're going to talk through the different stages of these strains now. Okay, and know that, you know, obviously we're not diagnosing or telling you where you are in your stage, but it's just something to understand. Okay, how much can I get back to activity? And we're going to talk about some of those activities and treatments that you can do as we go on as well. So first of all, we have that mild strain. And so this is going to be more of like that sharp pain that you feel directly when you had the injury or when you had that activity, but you can still kind of work out. You know, you just might have a little bit more achiness or pain, especially at the end of your activity. So you can still move with it. It's not impairing your movement pattern, right? And so within this stage as well, you know, you're not really going to see any signs of swelling or bruising because it is such a a mild injury where only like less than 10% of the fibers are really disrupted. And we can see a return to activity in as early as 10 to 12 days.
Yeah, I mean, and this is like the next day you might just wake up and have some pretty significant tightness, yeah, but can still put weight into it, can still kind of work that tightness out and feel like you can do some activity, where if you get into more of a moderate strain, you're going to still feel that same sharp, you know, pain right away. But then it might be tough to put pressure right onto that foot, yeah, because it is a little bit more significant. And of course, within all of these, there's ranges, a range. You know, we're going from 0 to 100, from, yeah, barely disrupting any fibers all the way up to a full rupture.
Yeah.
And this moderate strain, it says you're disrupting between 10 and 50% of the fibers.
Which is a big range.
You know, which is a huge range. Yeah. If you're disrupting 50% of the fibers, it's going to be a lot different than if you're, you know, in the 10 to 20% range. You'll probably see some mild swelling and bruising, because anytime we disrupt a lot of tissue, there's going to be some bleeding there. So you'll probably see, and if it is closer to the 50% range, you might be able to actually feel some sort of deficiency in the muscle somewhere, mm-hmm, especially in that gastrocnemius. If it's on the surface, on that medial head, you might be able to feel like, ooh, yeah, something happened there. And the return to activity timeline in this is says between 16 and 21 days. Again, that's going to be a big range, especially if you're more in that 50% range of the muscle fibers being disrupted. It could be quite a bit longer.
Yeah. And then we get into like that severe strain where this goes all the way up to 100% of the fiber disruption. So this is full rupture to a lot more rupture. And this is where we're definitely feeling, right, with the palpable means that we can actually feel the disruption within the fibers. And then we really just were unable to walk. We're unable to continue any kind of the activity that we were doing. We do get significant bruising. We are getting significant swelling. And then our return to sport or activity is probably 6 months or greater. So this is where we're really looking in the severity. And I think it is important to note a little bit of the return to activity, because even in the mild stage, you know, if you feel, well, you know, I can kind of work through it, like it's fine, and you continue kind of on your activity, whether that's just like going to play pickup basketball or whatever it may be. Well, also, you know, a risk factor for your gastric strain or making it worse is not, you know, rehabbing yourself properly and giving yourself, yeah, enough time to get better before you go back to your activity.
You're essentially putting yourself at more risk. Like, yeah, if you do have a minor strain and you feel like, oh, I can kind of work through this and keep doing things, and it's a little uncomfortable, but I'm just going to go back and play basketball. I always use that as an example, because I just started playing City League basketball. Yeah. You know, I'm in my second time doing this league, and this is something that I've always been worried about, because I was a sprint athlete in all of, you know, the meanings of it. I did track, baseball, basketball, football, and, you know, if I haven't done any of that for 3 years and suddenly jump into City League basketball, how are my calves going to hold, mm-hmm, up? How are my hamstrings going to hold up? Like, different areas that I know that I put a lot of force in, and when I'm playing, I'm not thinking about holding back.
No.
So, you know, I've always had this thought in my mind, like, man, I got to make sure that my calves are going to be able to hold up to this. But if you have a slight strain or a minor strain and then just say like, oh, it's fine, I'm just going to go right back into it, you're putting yourself at more of a risk, because you might have a deficiency in the muscle. You clearly showed yourself that the activity you were doing, your calf isn't quite up to the task. Mm-hmm. So if you suddenly try jumping back in and going 100%, you know, what's going to make the result different?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And so now let's talk about treatment, right? Especially for if you are feeling like you have strain or you get repetitive strains, like what are you supposed to be doing? And they are saying that early intervention is good. This is like 24 hours to 72 hours after you get injured, right? And early intervention means, what are we doing to kind of control the pain that we're having and make sure that we're not developing any contractures? So that's why early intervention can just mean starting to passively even move the foot. But what are we doing to try to get a little bit more motion, a little bit more movement, and make sure nothing locks up? I think a lot of the times, and especially when we get a sudden strain, it could be really scary, right? And so the last thing you want to do is exasperate it or make it any worse. So you know, we're usually afraid to move, we're afraid to stretch. And this is where, you know, research is showing it's good to go into these ranges of motion. Just do what is tolerable for you. Make sure you're not pushing into pain.
Yeah, doing like passive, especially when Oscar hurt his foot, I'm like,
yeah,
okay, as much as you can start getting yourself into dorsiflexion. He said anytime he tried pulling his foot towards his shin, he's just like, my body just wants to lock up. Mm-hmm. And that's what the contracture is that we're talking about. Yes, that muscle kind of wants to stay shortened because it was the process of lengthening that injured it in the first place, or that's what it remembers. Like, oh, when I did that, that's when I got injured, so I'm going to stay shortened or contracted to stay safe and start to heal. But if we don't move, then it's going to heal in a disorganized way. So starting to get yourself into some passive dorsiflexion, even if it's taking a towel or a belt or strap or something to lightly pull that foot back towards that shin, it might feel uneasy, but it's something that we should definitely do. And just an easy thing that hopefully every PT is trying to tell you is like just sitting there and spelling the ABCs with your feet. That is more active range of motion, but spelling the ABCs, both lowercase and capital, it doesn't really matter, but like both of those are going to get you moving that ankle in all directions actively, again, to start showing the muscle fibers, okay, we can do a little movement. You're kind of utilizing the inflammatory process to then like teach all of the building materials that are coming to that area. Okay, here's how we need to rebuild. Here's how we need to heal these fibers rather than sitting still for any amount of time, really.
And we are seeing that, I think, but the research is also showing, you know, non-operative treatment is kind of superior right now for calf strains.
And of course, like, especially in the lower grades, like that's where if you've had a lower grade, non-operative is showing very, you know, positive results. But if you do have a complete rupture, or if you're in more of like terminal of the severe category where a lot of the fibers were disrupted, that's where surgery might be more indicated, and you're going to want to work with some sort of orthopedic surgeon to figure out if surgery would be more helpful than non-operative. But in some pretty severe, like the body's amazing, and in some pretty severe strains where even if a lot of the calf is affected, our body has an incredible ability to self-heal.
It really does. And that's where we want to set it up in a proper environment, right? So starting to get low load static stretching is a really good way just to maintain not only that range of motion, but we also see that static stretching and static holds can also help to, you know, kind of prevent that muscle atrophy. So keeping that muscle from wasting away, especially in those early stages. So really low load stretching, what does that mean? That means putting what you can tolerate as a stretch. It doesn't have to mean that you're on a slant board and you're going into a full stretch, right? But even if you could take that foot, bend the knee, and start to get some range of motion in it, that is wherever you can stretch to, that is your low load.
Yeah, that's like I was mentioning with the towel or the strap, or even like for the soleus with knee bent, just resting with your feet flat on the ground and scooting forward to the edge of the chair and tucking those heels underneath you a little bit more and trying to get those heels to the ground. That's low load, and just sitting in that static stretch can be really helpful. And then after that, you really want to start doing some active stuff. And so before we start putting pressure into the calf itself by doing plantar flexion, working the muscles on the front of the shin to get into active dorsiflexion. You know, like I mentioned, doing the ABCs is going to start to do that. But what we call isotonic exercises, or if you have an exercise band, you can kind of step on it with one foot and then use the other foot to do kind of toe raises, where you're going to be working the muscles on the front of that shin to come into dorsiflexion.
Mm-hmm. And you can also work the muscles on the side of the calf as well. So our peroneals, you know, where it's not necessarily into our calf, but it's more on the side. So that's, you know, using that TheraBand again and maybe kicking the foot up into the side or up and out, getting just different ranges of motion as tolerable. Again, maybe that's not even with the band yet. Maybe it is just spelling the ABCs, but it's using as full range of motion as you can and in a really controlled manner. That's going to help to start to work back into, okay, now I can start to work my calf. Now I can start to maybe even put some isometric meaning not moving, some tension into that calf and just starting to hold.
Yeah, and that's even where, you know, with the band, a pretty low bar is then starting to do plantar flexion with against a light resistance band, because it just starts to give you some of that feedback of, okay, here's what it feels with my calf to press against a little bit of weight. before we start doing any sort of weight bearing, especially if weight bearing is tough and you have had a little bit more of a severe calf strain, starting with just a band or something before you get into doing any sort of balance or standing. You know, a lot of what we saw said working with shoes that have minimal or no heel lift or just working barefoot can be really beneficial. Because again, like if you're consistently wearing something with a heel on it, even if it's a half inch or a quarter inch or an inch, that is an inch or a half an inch less that our Achilles tendon essentially, or our calf, has to stretch for our heel to get to the ground. So just standing barefoot and shifting weight side to side can be really beneficial. Standing and starting to shift into our toes and shift back to our heel, that's going to help us get more of that isometric, you know, proprioceptive feedback by just standing and starting to shift our weight into that leg.
Yeah, and starting balance training as soon as possible. You know, they do show studies too that getting into a single leg even stance and balance and starting to put pressure on a single leg as early as you can tolerate is going to be better in the long run as you're starting to rehab as well.
Because anytime that we have disruption of fibers, we mess up what's called our proprioception, like our muscles, our tendons, they all have these little proprioceptive nerves in them that essentially tell us what our joints are doing, tell us what our body's doing in space. And so that's why anytime we roll our ankle or strain a muscle, or people deal with this a lot with ACL injuries, we kind of lose sense of what that joint is doing. And that can really affect our balance. That can really affect our coordination when we get back into running and activities. That's why balance can just be so huge. Like once you can tolerate it, if you just start standing on one leg for, you know, 30 seconds every time you think about it, just to start re-educating all those fibers on here's how we stay balanced on one leg, that could be super valuable.
Yeah. And then we start to go into, okay, well, if I can start to put load, if I can start to tolerate a little bit more, well, then I'm going to start strengthening, right? I'm going to start strengthening the calf, the soleus, all the muscles that it can tolerate, whether that's starting in a seated position and then going to a standing assisted position and then going into single leg as soon as possible. Again, getting into that single leg calf strengthening as soon as possible, meaning as soon as you can tolerate it, is really good to just continue to progress so that we can then go into more sport related stuff or plyometrics or just starting to get a little hopping and bouncing in.
Yeah. And a great kind of progression to think about with heel raises, because that's one of the things that we'll go to when we start strengthening, is if you do start in sitting, you can always put a little bit of resistance on your knees if you've got dumbbells or something, or just sit to the edge of your chair and lean into your feet and kind of put some of your body weight, and then do heel raises with the knee bent. I also like to do heel raises where we have our toes pointing forward, we have our toes pointing inward, and we have our toes pointing outward, because then we're kind of hitting slightly different fibers that we're putting the main stress on. And then if you go into standing, starting on flat ground, doing heel raises, again, toes forward, toes pointing inward, toes pointing outward, maybe then putting something small under your toes. Because again, then we're getting ourselves into the kind of that terminal stretch of the gastrocnemius when we're in standing, and doing same thing, heel raises, toes forward, inward, outward.
Single leg,
because then again, we're really just loading on that one side. And that's what's going to be similar to jumping off one leg, or suddenly stopping and changing direction with the majority of our body weight going into one leg. And then you can even do single leg with resistance.
And I think one of the most important factors to remember as we're starting any kind of strengthening program, or even in prevention, right? We always want to be thinking of that eccentric phase, that lowering phase, because that's where we're putting more, we're getting a lot of strength into that muscle, but we're also getting a lot of mobility and flexibility into that muscle at the same time. So that means if we're thinking about a calf raise, we're not just thinking about the lift. That's not the most important part, but the really slow lower, especially on a single leg.
And then that's where we progress into different plyometrics, where we're doing jumping and landing. And again, that eccentric is going to help us with those landing phases where we're quickly stretching into that eccentric stretch, but it's going a lot faster. So that's where we're doing it controlled and then working into the explosive stuff. As far as prevention goes, one of the best things you can do is warm up, warm those calves up, put some load into them. Every time before I have a game now, I'll stand on the sideline and just do some, you know, controlled type plyometric exercises, get against a wall and do some like fake runs where I just like quick, you know, change from leg to leg. It's going to get those calves prepped so that you're ready when you start to get back into that activity.
Especially when, like, I love the leaning against the wall because you're getting that full stretch into that dorsiflexion with that knee kind of extended as well. And so you're getting that full load, and it's, warming up is so essential if you're going to go running, because we mentioned soleus strains happen in steady state cardio, right? So especially when we're fatiguing. So if we're doing activities where we start to get tired. So especially in like high intensity workouts, running, anything that we're going to be changing quickly with our feet, we have to be warming up, and we can put load and stretch into it at the same time as starting to put a little bit of dynamic work. That's just going to help for what you're doing in the activity. Hopefully you learned a little bit. And if you know someone who continues to complain of getting calf strains, or this happens quite often, please pass this episode along to them so they can continue to learn. And hopefully you learn and feel empowered with the tools to prevent any future calf strains. And as always, if you can, leave us a rating and review. It just helps so that other people get this information about diagnoses, about pain, and what they can do in their own individual bodies.